Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast, where come rain, shine, or anything in between, we're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news you so love. I'm Ace Edwards, right alongside
Connor Balthazar.
And welcome to this week's weekly recap, where we definitely haven't had to try to do the intro three different times. But on this week's recap, we have a portal commit and, some not great Batcats recaps. But that's pretty much going to be the weekly recap, so it's going to be relatively short. But before we get into it, we do want to thank the sponsors of the show, and that is Greg Arthur. If you want to be mentioned at the top of every show as well as support the show, please be sure to check out the supporters link in both our Twitter and podcast bios, because it really, really helps. Every single dollar helps keep the show what it is, basically. But let's dive straight into the new portal commit, the new Catskitball edition. And that is former UIC Flames guard, CJ Jones. And this one was a highly sought-after guy, which you wouldn't, I don't think you'd strictly guess based on his pure raw numbers. But still, this is a massive portal addition for the Cats. And Connor, what do you have to say about him?
The first thing is he was a high school teammate of current Wildcat Buddy Rich, so that's probably where at least part of the connection is. But other than that, he started 31 of 33 games for UIC this year, which UIC really struggled this year. But CJ Jones, you can watch his highlights and tell there is a lot of potential there. He's a very good outside shooter. He shot almost 38% from three this past year. And then also, that wasn't a huge chunk of his shots. More often than not, three quarters of his field goal attempts this year were two-point attempts. So he is also good at getting to the rim. He shot 42.5% overall this season, and he's very, very athletic and really good at getting to the rim and finishing there. But additionally, he also averaged almost 5 assists per game. To about 2.8 turnovers, so fairly good assist to turnover ratio. I think his turnover rate is about the same as Cam Carter's, but he is doing a lot more when he has the ball, getting a lot of assists, pretty good rebounder as well, averaging 3.5 a game, but really good at getting to the bucket. And a good outside shooter. I say he probably fits into sort of a wing/guard. Either a two or a three is really, I think, where he would fit best. I don't really see him as being a primary ball handler, which he did a lot of for UIC this past year, which definitely explains a lot of the high turnover rate. But he played really, really well later in the season. Down the stretch, he was a lot better. That second half of the year, he was really good. And he also had a 30% assist rate.
Yeah, it was 30%.
This year, which is kind of nuts. But he really was a really good player. And somebody that kind of seems like going all the way back to the beginning of this portal cycle, it seems like his name has been really flying around for K-State. So it's kind of always felt like a matter of time with him. And that also means that the staff has now gotten, I think, two of their five visitors to commit so far. And that's with Terrace Reed committing to UConn. Somebody else
committed to Ole Miss. I don't remember who.
Did he ever visit here?
No, I don't think he ever. Oh, he had a visit scheduled, but he didn't make it.
And then there's Baba Miller, who hasn't announced a commitment yet. He visited the same time as CJ Jones. But there's no indication that we shouldn't feel confident about that. I really hope we get Baba Miller. But going 1-for-2 from this past weekend, though, is still good. And CJ Jones is somebody that, even though his raw numbers aren't fantastic, he has a decent shot at starting next year, I think. But it remains to be seen. I'm pretty happy with this pickup.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the fact that you know, you look at his stat line and it looks like he's able to do a little bit of everything. And I think that was sort of a player that K-State was missing last year in the way of a glue guy, so to speak. I think Quez Glover was supposed to be kind of that glue guy, whether or not he was starting or he was a Desi Sills first guy off the bench type. But there's also a small bit of other news that has seemingly been, you know, out in the aether. And it seems people are saying that Arthur Kaluma may be coming back, which if he... You and I had our frustrations with Arthur in this past year, and we were not alone in those frustrations. But that being said, it's not like he's a bad player, and it's not like someone that you should or really can afford to turn away.
Yeah, Kaluma's the type of player that if we saw just his stat line and just his highlights from this past year, but everything just happened in like a different team's uniform. If we were pursuing him in the portal and we got him, we'd be super excited about it. The only reason that I think people wouldn't be as excited is because we have watched him so closely that we know both his pros and his cons pretty well. Whereas when you're kind of in the portal hunt, you're more often than not just looking at like major strengths, really. That's just most of what you're going to see. But Kaluma, I think, could really thrive in a K-State offense that doesn't require him to really kind of be the number one guy night in, night out, and at worst the number two. This is based on our current roster for next year. We're going to already have Doug McDaniel and throw in CJ Jones and David Castillo, Dede Ames. There's a lot of guys on there that can take weight off of Arthur Kaluma's shoulders, and add in a few more, and I think taking some of that pressure off of Arthur Kaluma to kind of have to do everything, and so he can just thrive in a role, which to me is going to be three-point shooting, driving to the bucket when it open, and just high effort defense. If you can get him to exert that effort that we need from him night in, night out, and accept a like role of like the third or fourth offensive option, that's a pretty incredible pull to make this offseason.
Yeah, I agree. Both of those additions, although the Arthur Kaluma one isn't confirmed, it's just seemingly reports have come out saying he's leaning towards coming back, which you and I were banking on him being gone.
Even going into this season, I didn't really expect him to be back. That would be a massive, massive surprise if he ends up returning. I'd be pleased about it. I'd be happy because that's just one less major recruitment you have to deal with. That's one less guy you have to teach the offense and defensive schemes to. It's one less guy you have to teach the sets. That's one less guy that you have to show all the practice drills to, which like isn't the biggest consideration in the world, but like that is just one less thing to do in an off season. So if he does come back, that's awesome. If not, that doesn't really change anything because we were not really including him in the calculus for next year anyways.
No.
So he would be a fun added bonus.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to describe it. But that's it for the men's basketball recruiting news or roster news. Now we can get into the Batcats, and it was a rough week, I think would be the best way to describe it generously. The Oklahoma series, we ended up getting swept in Oklahoma. Two of the games weren't even remotely close, and the last one was a heartbreaker in the last inning on a walk-off. The first two games were really disappointing because it felt like the game was over in the second inning after Oklahoma put up a 9 spot, and there was nothing really we could do after that point. There's nothing to salvage from this game. It just entirely awash. in terms of notable offensive performances, there really aren't any. Nick English had two RBI. He had a double. Brady Day had a double. Brendan Jones stole two bases. That's it.
Dan Rivera drew two walks, the only two walks of the day.
Yeah, compared to 10 strikeouts and 7 left on.
Yeah, so just a brutal day, no offensive standouts. Nobody had more than one hit. Dan Rivera was the only guy to reach on his own merits multiple times, I guess. Mm-hmm. There may be people that reach on errors, I can't recall, but it was just a very forgettable game. Luckily, I was not able to watch this game, and I count my blessings for it, because yikes.
Yeah, I watched all of this game.
I'm really sorry, man.
That, it's okay, it's my job. It's not my job, but it's my job. You can cover the pitchers as well.
Yeah, so Josh Wintrib, he got the start, and is credited with a loss of just 1 2/3 for him. 55 pitches, faced 14 batters and all of that. 7 hits given up, 8 total runs, 6 of them earned. Just 2 strikeouts, and that's kind of what he's been most consistent with this year, is he's been a high strikeout guy, and he walked 2 as well. Nothing really to take from that performance other than just a cascade of failures. Jacob Frost relieved him and didn't fare too much better. 2 1/3, 54 pitches, 4 hits, 4 runs, 3 earned, 3 walks, 2 wild pitches, just 1 strikeout. He faced 13 batters in his time. So ever since his no-hitter, combined no-hitter with Wentworth, it's been a very strange year for Jacob Frost. But hopefully he can find his groove, because we really need him down the stretch. Preston Martinez, he came in and pitched 2 quality innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts. Then Andrew Evans, 2 innings, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. So those last two guys, pretty uneventful outing for both of them. But I think Oklahoma was pretty well in cruise control by that time.
They were, yeah.
Hardly mattered.
Yeah, there's no other way to describe it than we got blown up in the first 2 innings and we couldn't come back from it. The next game was closer for longer, but still ended up as a blowout. 11-4 in favor of Oklahoma. You have the notable offensive performances, of which there are... I'm really only seeing 2.
Yeah. Again, another not great day. Caitlin Culpepper, he had a big triple, 2 RBI triple. And Brady Day, he went 1 for 2 and walked twice. So pretty solid day for him. Beyond that, not a lot really notable here. Carson Kwek, he went 1 for 2 and had an RBI and stole a base as well. So solid day for a guy off the bench. You pinch hit for Lobliner. Beyond that, though, not a lot to really write home about. The team was 6 for 33, 2 walks to 10 strikeouts. Only left 4 on. But,
because no one was getting
yeah,
on.
Yeah, nobody was getting on. So it was a rough day. Daniel Rivera, he pinch hit for Parsons. And he had
1-1 count.
Yeah, 1-1. Yeah, I forgot that's what it was. But it was a really strange decision. And he also committed an error. I believe at one point this game, we narrowed it to a 2-run lead. The sixth inning, it was 6-4. But then the bottom of the eighth, OU got 5. We just could not slow them down there at the end. So OU kind of made a habit of getting their runs in chunks. Just another game where we just could not get the bats going. We could not slow OU's down.
Yeah. In terms of pitching performances, Owen Borima went 4 innings, 5 earned on 7 hits, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts, 92 pitches. Again, it was a day where he just didn't really have his control. He was leaving a lot of sliders up, which you can't do. Sam Roberts went 1 1/3, 2 hits, 1 earned. That's it. Adam Arthur faced exactly one batter, got him to ground out, refused to elaborate, and then left. Jack Wentworth had his worst outing of the year, unfortunately. 1 2/3, 5 hits, 4 earned on 3 strikeouts. It was just tough. They sort of had him dialed in, and he entered in a not great situation as well. It happens. Then Cole Weisenbaker went 2/3 of an inning, only gave up 1 run, and that's it. So really, it came down to Borma and Wentworth both getting timed up pretty well by Oklahoma's hitters. They just weren't really chasing that often, which a lot of seemingly what Rudy Darrow's pitching philosophy is try to set them up as early as you can by throwing a lot of strikes in the zone and then try to get them to chase. So he's like trying to blend two different pitching philosophies. I have several opinions on this, and I feel like the pitching results have sort of spoke for themselves on how well this philosophy is going. And I don't want to put all the blame on the players. I don't want to put all the blame on coaching, because it's always a mixture. But there needs to be, if this team is, I know that I'm saying this in game two in a series, we have 3 more games to cover. If this team is going to do anything, make any noise in terms of postseason, I still think today we're a lock to make the tournament. It's just our seed is falling really, really quickly. And if we continue on our current trajectory, we're going to be sweating that selection day again. We need to, and it's not easy to ask, but we need to rethink the entire pitching philosophy mid-season on the fly. Because there are exactly 2 pitchers on this roster that I think can match the philosophy with effectiveness, and that's Mason Buss and Adam Arthur. Jack, Neighbors, and Borma all do not pitch to that style. They pitch to their own style, and it works for them. But everyone else seems to be sort of trying to blend philosophies, and it doesn't really seem to be working. But, I mean, it'll work for a game for a pitcher, and then a lot of things will change and they won't have it one day. Like, Wintrob is another one you can make an argument the philosophy is working, but that's neither here nor there. Do you have any thoughts on that before we move to the final game?
Nope, no more thoughts.
No thoughts?
No, I don't ever do that.
I don't think either, don't worry. But the last game was a heartbreaker to secure the sweep, and it was Oklahoma 8-7 victory on a walk-off against Tyson Neighbors. And this one, there is a little more upside in terms of offense, as in there is actual performances to talk about. Chuck Ingram went 3 for 5 with 2 runs and 1 RBI, which was the biggest RBI of the game for K-State, where it was a game-tying solo shot to what we thought extend the game into extras. Yeah, it didn't happen. But Brendan Jones goes 1 for 4 with an RBI. Kalen Culpepper, 2 for 5 with a run. Brady Day only 1 for 4, but does get an RBI on a double. Nick English, 1 for 3 with a walk, a strikeout, and a left on base. Hayden Phillips, 2 for 4. Rafael Pelletier, 1 for 4, but he hit a missile to secure a home run for himself. And then Bishop went 1 for 4 as well. And, you know, this was a pretty solid day. The problem is that the one error on the game goes to Brady Day, and that error was probably the error that cost K-State the game. Or not directly and not exclusively. I don't want to pin it all on probably the best player on the team. But that one error was really, really costly. And, yeah, it was that run that ended up winning the game.
Yeah. Really, really unfortunate outcome for K-State. Because after really getting battered the first two games, they came out, showed a ton of poise, and really should have probably won this game. But just weren't quite able to get it done, which is just so, so disappointing. Blake Dean, he gets another weekend start, but he only goes 2 2/3, 6 hits, 6 earned runs, 2 walks, just 1 strikeout, hit a batter as well. Not a very good outing for Blake, but the potential is very, very obvious with Blake Dean, and I think with a bit more experience, he could be yet another oddly really good pitcher on a K-State pitching staff that seems to never really decide how consistent it wants to be. J.J. Slack, who we did not see much of in the beginning of the season, he has really come on the scene recently, pitching 3 innings, getting 3 strikeouts, 2 walks, no hits, no runs allowed. So really fantastic outing for J.J. Slack. And then Tyson Nabors pitched the last 3 innings and unfortunately does get credit with the loss. Gave up 3 hits, 2 runs. One of those was earned. Then 1 walk to 3 strikeouts. So his longest outing of the season thus far by a lot. And an unfortunate result because I do think he's still getting his control back a little bit. The stuff is there. But I think he probably just needs a little bit more time before he's really back to his old self. And that's not really unexpected. The relief really did all they could. We were in an early hole regardless, and the hot corner's been inconsistent defensively. And it's been a cascade of errors all around. Earlier in the season, we've been able to kind of pin it on one group or the other, but as of late, it's really kind of been a team-wide meltdown, and with the exception of at least Brady Day offensively, really, but like it's been a difficult stretch for this team, and it's becoming very obvious that they've been struggling to get through it.
Yeah, and that sort of showed itself in the shutout loss up against UConn, which was another just brutal, brutal game to watch. And, you know, in a shutout, you don't really have any notable offensive performances.
Yeah. Seemed like anytime we got anything kind of going, it just would turn upside down in the worst way possible. Kalen Culpepper at one point got on base, and I was picked off after probably like 10 or 12 pick attempts or something like that.
No, that was later in the game. He got picked off on like the 4th attempt the first time.
But Kalen, 1 for 3, drew a walk. 3 walks for K-State compared to 8 strikeouts. Only 5 hits as a team, and those were all kind of evenly distributed. Just not the best day, really, for the offense. Lots of struggles. Brennan Jones struck out 3 times, as did Rafael Pelletier. Pelletier had a really rough day at the plate. He just was not seeing the ball properly at all. But, yeah, this was a game that K-State did get some advantageous positions on more than one occasion, but they just weren't able to convert.
Yeah. Pitching wasn't awful. I mean, you only gave up 4 runs, so it wasn't bad. Ty Rule made his starting debut after, I believe, his 2nd game of the year. He left with injury in his arm. Had a pretty good outing, only going 1 inning. 1 walk, 2 strikeouts. Ended up getting the last batter on a flyout. Then Andrew Evans came in, pitched 2 1/3, 3 hits, 2 earned, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts, which is more than respectable. Coming in is basically the 2nd starter. Adam Arthur, 2 2/3, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 2 strikeouts. Again, perfectly acceptable. Sam Roberts, 1 inning, 2 strikeouts. Preston Martinez, 1/3 of an inning, 1 hit, 1 run. Then Jack Wentworth, 2/3 of an inning, and got a strikeout. So you can't I mean, this was a pretty solid day for the pitching staff. It's just the bats were ice cold.
Yeah. Good to see Tyrell back. We've been seeing a bit more of Sam Roberts as of late, and situationally he can be pretty effective. But yeah, it's been a rough stretch for the team as a whole. Just even watching, just from body language, you can tell that everyone's really down right now, or at least they have been. And they just desperately need to pick me up.
Yeah. And the next game, it was up against Northeastern, who's not a bad team, but K-State barely scrapes away with an extra inning victory, 9-8, after leading the game. That would be 7-0 after the fifth inning. Then Northeastern just storms on back to tie the game in the last three. And that's... Granted, we couldn't watch this game because Flow Sports doesn't exist. I'm convinced that it doesn't. But... that's really worrying. It's really worrying giving up a 7-0 lead in a game at all. But in terms of notable offensive performances, there was a little bit of a shift in the lineup for this game. And some of it worked, some of it didn't. Brady Day went 2-for-4 with 2 walks and 3 RBI, including a home run in the first inning. Kalen Culpepper goes 2-for-6 with 1 run and 1 RBI. Brendan Jones goes 1-for-4 with a walk and a strikeout. Chuck Ingram, rough day, 0-for-6, 3 Ks. Kyan Lotus makes another start in right field, gets a run off of a walk and 3 strikeouts. And David Bishop has himself a little come-out game. He went 2-for-4 with 2 RBI and a walk. And then Jaden Parsons collecting a 2-for-3 with 2 runs and 2 walks. So a lot of contributions here. Still, I think the strikeout numbers are a bit high, but when you can justify it with 8 total walks and 6 RBI, and of course the left on base number being 9 as opposed to our 7 goal that we set, we ended up winning the game. But if we didn't, this would have been the... First off, I would have been really, really annoyed, but I also would be harping on the left on base a lot more.
Yeah. A very spotty day, I guess, is the best way to put it for the lineup.
Yeah.
But pitching-wise, got a good start out of Josh Wintrob in this one. 4 1/3, 2 hits, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. Did hit 2 batters. He loaded up the bases with no outs in the first inning and somehow got out of it.
The Tyson Neighbors special.
Pretty much, yeah.
Freshman Tyson Neighbors special.
Then J.J. Slack came in, and he pitched 2 1/3, 4 hits given up, 2 runs, only one of them earned, with 3 strikeouts. Then Sam Roberts came in for just a third of an inning, and just 9 pitches, really kind of got blown up. 3 runs, 2 of those earned, had a balk as well, and hit 3 batters. I don't think I can imagine a more disastrous 9 pitches.
Yeah.
Tyson Neighbors, he pitched 2 innings, gave up 3 hits, 3 runs, 2 of those earned, a walk, and a strikeout. And then Jackson Wentworth had to come in and save the game. He gets credit with the win. He goes 2 innings, gets 4 strikeouts and 25 pitches. So that's the Jackson Wentworth that we've been used to this year. He came in and just shut it down. And that's what we needed. It was just what the doctor ordered. So... Wentworth, of course, had a great outing. Wintrob, he had a quality, well, not an actual quality start, but it was a good start. And everything in between was a little shaky at times. Slack was solid. Neighbors had his moments, but did, again, in the clutch, which is kind of the opposite of what we've been used to with Tyson Neighbors, did let Northeastern back into the game. But Northeastern coming into this game, they were 27-8. They were 34th in RPI, so this actually goes down as a very high-quality road win. So K-State, after this 1-1 four stretch that we've uncovered this week, they're still 34th in RPI, which goes to show just how important it was to schedule as difficult as we did. Yeah. That's not me saying that we shouldn't have won a few more games. Like, we probably should be 3-2 right now. We just really had no business playing as poorly as we did against UConn. And we should have taken that last game against OU. That would have been fantastic. But we're at where we are. So just kind of got to deal with it.
Yeah. The next week really, well, the weekend doesn't get any easier. Going up against number 15 in the country, Oklahoma State, at Toynton. So you got to hope home field advantage helps us out here, because last year in Stillwater, I'm pretty sure our average margin of loss was like 7 runs.
Yeah, there's a couple games I got really ugly down in Stillwater. Although, maybe it's just the traveling to Oklahoma thing, because we haven't beaten OU in a series in Norman in decades.
Yeah.
But we swept them last year. And then Oklahoma State, I think we were at the very least competitive with them the last time we had them up in Manhattan. I know we took at least a game, and maybe two. So, again, we know this team has been finicky on the road in the past, to put it very, very kindly. But Oklahoma State, they're a really good team. But at least we will be back at home after a fairly extended road trip. There's some opportunities here. If you can take two of these three against Oklahoma State, then you're really right back in it, and you can kind of shrug off all the quad one road losses. And then you also get a supposed cupcake against Omaha.
Oh God, remember last year.
That is why I said supposed. Yeah. But it's Omaha's around 300th in RPI, and we beat them last year at least once. And so it's a absolute must win game if you're K-State. That's the sort of game where if you lose it, you drop like 20 spots in RPI. That's Tuesday after Oklahoma State. But it's a very, very winnable game. I'm not even going to worry about that until after the Oklahoma State series.
Yeah. So, do you have any final notes before we sign off for the day?
Yeah, it's been a very disappointing stretch for the Backcats, but I think you said it well earlier. If the season ended today, we'd probably still be in the tournament. If they can kind of get things turned around here this weekend against Oklahoma State, then the narrative's going to shift back. This team has just been prone to going through spells this year, and they have a huge opportunity this weekend. OU series is going to go how we wanted. Glad we were able to salvage the game against Northeastern, because that is a really, really good win, despite having never heard of Northeastern until we played them. RPI thinks very highly of them, and that's what's important. So I hope we can take down Oklahoma State. And don't forget that the Sunday game is on ESPNU for Oklahoma State as well. Normally they're on ESPN Plus, but I don't know why we're on ESPNU on Sunday, but we were deemed important enough to be on there. So hopefully we are capable of winning that, so we don't get embarrassed on at least semi-national television. But
yeah, I think that's a good goal. But that pretty much wraps up this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to follow or contact the show, you can follow us just about anywhere at Aggieville ACATS. And if you want to email us, we're AggievilleAlleyCats@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on a more personal note, I am at ACEdward00.
I'm at Connor Bautzelsor, capital C, capital B.
And if you want to support the show financially, please be sure to check out both the official Aggieville Alley Cats merch store and the supporters link. Both are listed in our podcast and Twitter bios. But most importantly, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast, where come rain, shine, or anything between, we're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news that you so love. Stay safe, Alley Cats.